CliffCentral.com.
All righty. Good morning and welcome to this morning on CliffCentral.com. We are here to look after you. It's Mbulelo, Leanne, and I. And we were just busy with Dr. Hanan and Barrett, and we'd like to hear from you too. Let us know what you're up to. Either contact at cliffcentral.com, or if you're on the live stream, drop us a comment. There are a couple of people talking here. Rabubi Tracy says, just to point out your thing about Lesilo, Rabubi, I could sing Spider-Man's theme in Tswana. Yeah, lots of us could. Lucky for you, says Zuzi Lezungu, we didn't have Lesilo in KZN. Yeah. Yes, that's very good. That was just great.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That was great.
Apparently, according to Lucky, if you watch Lesilo now, you'll regret it. It's probably because a lot of those shows.
Where would you find it?
I don't know. SABC archives, probably. This is why they had to look after their archives. We were talking about that the other day.
No, and they don't, by the way.
No, of course not. So we've got Collectomania coming up later on. If the SABC could come and present in Collectomania, they could show us shows like Lesilo, and we'd be like, whoa, this is great. This is powerful stuff. But, you know, whatever.
Modimo we, yo.
Yeah,
is what the Sotho people would say.
That's right.
Para Morena Jesu.
Okay, so so a couple of things. First of all, you know Leanne loves these true crime shows, right? That's your favorite thing. And it's something I just don't care about at all. I'm not interested in true crime at all. I don't like even these serial killer shows or any of that stuff. It upsets me. I don't want to see the worst of humanity. I'd like to see the best. And you love these shows. But you found some TikTok video that's a simple explanation as to why some people love it and some people hate it. Do you want to tell us what happens?
Yeah. So he is a crime psychology professional, lecturer, specialist, etc. And I follow his channel because he doesn't get into emotional stuff. He gives you the science.
Okay.
And the science in this case actually shows more of an emotional side. So his theory is that statistics show that females tend to be more interested in general in true crime stories than males.
Okay.
And the statistics show that in general, in many of these true crime stories, the victims are female and
perpetrators,
the suspects or the perpetrators are male. And again, this is in general. Females tend to be on the lookout or finding survival techniques or preparing themselves for what could happen in the world. Now, we don't have, we're not like Karate Kid who's been trained by someone in a forest who's preparing us for what's going to happen in our lives.
Yuggy.
Yeah. We're not being taught by the self-defense guru in a forest about how to protect ourselves. And so we tend to turn to what's available in the current world. And that's things like true crime stories. What could really happen?
Are you saying a lot of women who watch these shows are trying to prepare themselves for the worst in case some killer's around?
Yes.
Wow.
It's your inner psychology saying, I don't want that to happen to me. Let me watch it and learn from it and see how I can protect myself in future. For instance, you know, any person who's followed the Ted Bundy story, one of the tactics that he used was to, you know, pretend he was battling to get things into the boot of his car because he was disabled or in a wheelchair or in crutches. And you know, a woman would stop to help him out of her empathy and her sympathy. And that's now changing the woman's psychology to say, I'm not going to stop
no
that person.
Good,
that could be a risk.
No good deed goes unpunished. Stop trying to help people. That's how you get into trouble. Stop it.
And the other thing is that women, because they're now watching these things, enjoy these shows because they always end in finding the perpetrator and punishing them. And that is hugely satisfying for someone who's scared of being pursued in their own lives.
What a horrible!
So I just found that really interesting.
Can I just point out what a terrible existence that is? Like running around the whole time worried that people are serial killers. I mean, It just doesn't enter my mind. I've thought about this very rarely, but it's always been something that's kind of entered my thought, and then it goes as quickly as it comes in. It's like, there are not that many serial killers in the world. There really aren't. You know, that's why they're famous, because they tend to, you know, they tend to do what at a minimum is required to make them famous. And many of these people are the exceptions to the rule, not only in terms of their mental state of being, but also because they get caught eventually. You know, if you're a really great serial killer, you should never get caught, I think, first of all. And second of all, because they're so rare, it's not worth worrying about them every day. It's not worth thinking about them every day. This is, you realize, you girls who like this stuff, if that's the reason that you've just explained now, that's a pretty terrible reason to be watching such horrible stuff.
Okay, let me be clear. Firstly, these are not true crime isn't always about serial killers. In fact, a lot of the time it's about a once-off situation where a family member murdered a family member, or the neighbor did, or something like that. In fact, most of them are arisen from people that you know, so, you know, crimes from people that you know.
Sure.
So let's put aside the serial killer aspect. There are certain shows that focus on serial killers, but a lot of them are individual-based scenarios. And another video that I saw quite recently was just a normal guy who was posting a video about an experience that he had as he was leaving the gym. And he said, I was walking out of the gym towards the parking lot, towards my car. A couple of steps in front of me was a woman who was also leaving the gym. Mm. And I noticed that she kept on turning around and looking at me and speeding up her pace. And eventually, way before she got to her car, she pressed the button to unlock the car. She jumped in her car and locked the doors immediately and then stared back to see where I was. And he said, I just realized that I never think about someone following me to my car after I leave gym. And, you know, to think that women are conscious of this and they have to be aware of it all the time. That's right. How they're living. They're living in this perpetual state of fear.
Well, that's why the worst thing you can do when a woman is going to a car with the looking back and the speeding up, the last thing you want to do is chase after her. That doesn't make her feel good.
No, don't chase after going, no, don't worry, I'm not going to do anything to you.
I'm coming.
I'm not a killer.
Flailing your arms around above your head, not a good idea. Or reaching into your backpack for something, because that's not going to look good either. Yeah. Just leave
her
alone.
These are the photos of my children.
Yeah. Stop, I haven't killed in years. Stop. I just want to show you my crochet. Stop, I've turned it around.
Yeah, look, I mean, I understand. I kind of, because men throughout history have been shitheads, you know, we've kind of done anything we wanted and taken women against their will and that sort of thing. So I understand that that's deep. It's imbued in our DNA. And women should be afraid of men, because a lot of men in history have been exactly the kind of people who you should be afraid of. So it's not as if this is an irrational, illogical thing, but it is a different time. And I don't think that we should be paranoid. I think it's great if you watch these things because you are interested and you're curious and you want to know what happens. But if you find that you're watching them because you are genuinely trying to plan an escape in the event of something, or look for clues as to whether or not, you know, a man is to be trusted, I think maybe it's not good source material for that sort of stuff. I don't know that it's useful, because you're looking at the extremes. You're not looking at those ordinary people in your life. Remember, we know that most of the danger for women in modern society comes from people they know. Most of the danger in...
Well, most danger in life.
Again, Gareth, I think you're thinking of these true crime stories as just about serial killers. They're about
the famous ones.
They're about a man who just lost it one day and shot his wife. You know, a woman who lost it one day and killed her children.
I get it, but I mean, I don't want to watch stories like that about crazy women either, because it's going to make me paranoid about every relationship I have going forward. And I can't afford that
happen. You don't need to watch it.
Look at how it's already poisoned Mbulelo, so he can't have a relationship now because he's watched too much of this shit.
That's it.
I just think, but balance, now Leanne, balance it out with happy Disney stories, and then we've got a deal, okay? Like, balance it out, half and half.
Do you walk around like going to shopping malls and it's like a thing for you like that because you've seen 100%. These shows?
Really?
Oh, that's so interesting 100%. To me because less I'm permanently murdered than ever.
And listen, sorry, I think the end of your question was because of these shows. No. before I started watching these shows, before they were available to us on a platform in bulk, in catch-up.
The crime omnibus.
That's it.
Yeah. Even before that, I've been a victim too many times of these sorts of crimes. To the point where I've watched a security video of the man who was about to assault me following me.
Mm.
So I do. I walk around every single time. I never feel at ease. All the time I'm walking with my bag closed next to tucked under my arm. All the time I'm not holding my phone in my hand. All the time I'm not parking in places where it's far away from the entrance. Whether these are just crimes because of perpetuated by poverty or evil or serial killing or just a sexual predator, it doesn't matter. They're all the same threat, you know, to a woman.
So if you're in Stockholm,
when I get into my car, I don't reverse unless my car's locked.
Okay, so if you're in Stockholm, would you be more relaxed, or is it so deeply ingrained that it's the default setting, or is it I'm a woman in South Africa, which is interesting to me.
Well, clearly, I was very relaxed when the perpetrator I'm talking about, who I've seen on video, that was in a very affluent suburb of London. In Chelsea.
Oh, okay.
Clearly, I was very relaxed because I just walked home from a subway without looking behind me. I don't think I would have done that in South Africa. So I think a lot of it has to do with my current surroundings. In Stockholm, I may be more relaxed, but there are weird people in Stockholm too.
Yeah.
But, oh, yeah.
You know. But,
yeah. Oh, we do live in different times, but don't for a moment. Again, I love bringing history into this because history gives us perspective. And throughout history, there hasn't really been a city or a town or a country where it's been a good idea to walk around at night on your own, man or woman. It's a very new thing, this idea of, I need to feel safe walking around at night. First of all, no, you shouldn't be walking around at night on your own anywhere. It's not a great thing.
Well, also because of ghosts and werewolves. And
ghosts, things. Werewolves, lesilo, animals. I mean, an animal, you know, a great big jaguar could jump out of the bushes and fucking eat you. You just got to be a little more sensible about this. Don't walk around at night, okay?
On a scientific level, mankind is poorly evolved, actually, to be walking around at night. Yeah, so
exactly.
We can't really turn
our necks.
We've
got these tiny little eyes that are blinded. Yeah. Tiny eyes that are blinded by oncoming light.
Yeah, that's it.
But just to be clear as well, that is just one aspect why women might watch these shows.
I got you.
Let's go to why people are interested in these shows. And again, interestingly enough, the study was based on men and women and nothing in between.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you think about crimes against homosexuals or anybody in the LGBTQ plus community, that's a whole nother story. And this is just, you know, one level of crime. But the other reason why I watch them is because I really enjoy the investigative process.
Okay.
And for that reason, I'd watch something like CSI. I love watching these detectives.
So you love when they find like,
you know,
someone
unravel this sort of
they
thing.
Find someone's ball hairs on an envelope and they're like, well, it's definitely that. Then they do the DNA test. They find out who it was. That interests you? I mean, I fall asleep
hugely.
Before you. Oh, my God. Oh, we discovered his fingerprint on the barrel of the gun, and now we know it was him. And no, there was this chemical which is found
Why
in the
are you
soil.
Speaking like a woman?
Am I? I didn't know that was a woman's accent. Okay, well, I've just.
And the legal process afterwards, you know, how you can have as much evidence as you like, but it depends on maybe a jury. It depends on perhaps which judge it was and their past experience. All of that is incredibly interesting.
The only way that stuff would interest me is if it was my case and I was the one who needed to get off. If I was the one who needed
watching
to be
in heaven.
To be found.
Imagine
innocent.
Heaven's real. Oh, that's awesome. Gareth, oh my God, I hope heaven's real now. hopefully
just so that I can, just so I can enjoy it, just so I can enjoy a crime show for the first time ever.
And then, hey, God, let's take a seat. So, what you up to, Paul? So
Leanne has told us why people would watch these shows. I'll tell you why you won't, or why I don't. Because it's boring. It's about stuff. These people are already dead. Nothing you can do to change that. The information.
But so are the people you study in history.
Yes, I know. But those people didn't. The thing about them that makes them interesting isn't that they're dead. With yours, it's only that they're dead that makes them interesting. They didn't.
No. What about the psychology behind the person who committed the crime?
What do I care?
I mean, just so avoid, many people that you people. Study in history, you know, were killing people, whether it was in battle or poisoning or whatever it was. Villages being slayed.
Well, maybe it's about the magnitude of those people's lives. Like, if some person in a, you know, in a small English village gets murdered, it's like, well, you know, they were a person in a small English village. We probably didn't even know their name until they were killed. And that's also why I don't care about this van couple. What's it? The Laundry, Brian
Laundry. Petito and Brian Laundry.
I could give two shits about Brian Laundry. The only reason we know Brian Laundry's name now, or the name of his girlfriend, is because there was a murder. And murder is something anyone can do. It's not that exciting. It's not that interesting. It's possible. What's interesting about Alexander the Great is that he conquered the known world at the age of 33. So I'm more interested in that than Brian Laundry, forgive me. And I would rather watch a documentary on, you know, some of his famous battles than I would like where Brian Laundry's van is. I don't care where Brian Laundry is. I really don't care.
But would you watch your own murder with God? Let's just say hypothetically, heaven's real, whatever. Let's suspend reality for a little bit. Okay. Heaven's real now.
Only because it
you
was
get
me.
There, St. Peter, what's happening? Game of Thrones, obviously God's watched every single Game of Thrones. He's done with that.
Sure.
Whatever. He said, God, let's rewatch here. What do you think of that? What could I have done? Would you watch that?
That would be interesting. But
that would be interesting.
But it might be more interesting. Like I've said to you a million times, my idea of heaven is to have a time machine, to be able to go backwards and forwards, not just into history. I love the idea of what the future might hold as well, and to see what happens and what actually happened, as opposed to what the story tells you happened. Because sometimes they leave stuff out, or there's no evidence. So yes, I would be interested in true crime if it was on the world stage, but these hicks in like Louisiana who murder each other over a piece of rope, or hubcaps in fucking New Zealand or whatever. I'm not interested in those people. I really don't care what they've been murdering each other for thousands of years. They're going to carry on murdering each other. And the fact that they do is not interesting just because they find a ball hair in an envelope. I know.
I hope at the age of 85, I get taken by a leopard in a hospital. Just the leopard happens
from
to
the
be,
back.
Yeah, like I don't want to go like a classic 85-year-old. It just drags me out the window, jumps away, and then they find out like 50 years later.
Have you seen how slowly leopards prey dies?
No, that's fine. I'm 85. I mean, it's been all right. I'm 85.
At that stage, you're living slowly anyway. Anyway,
And it'll be a visceral death.
Heinz says,
I was hectic till the end.
Heinz says we're being very hard on you this morning, Leanne. But Leanne loves this type of show. She's the one who brought it up, and I'm glad for her. There are lots of people I know who love those shows. They're not all women, by the way.
No, and I don't take it as you guys being hard on me. It's you're probably expressing your opinion a little louder than I express mine. Mm. But that doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter to me. And it doesn't change or make me question what I enjoy watching.
And you know what? You are in the by far the majority, because the most popular shows on television and in podcasting are true crime shows. People love them. Mm. I mean, CSI, how many spin-offs of that have they had? And they're all in the top five of the last 20 years, every single time they're
and
in the top
And it's not only
five
that. It's like... It's the whole process, like picking up on a cold case and using new technology to figure out ways of solving the crime.
Yeah, I totally get that, you know,
it's amazing,
that it is
fascinating.
I'm not saying people shouldn't be interested in it, and you're stupid if you are. It's just not interesting to me. That's all. I'm not that into like solving crimes and stuff. I think that's It can be interesting, of course. We went to the police forensics lab, remember, Leanne? They showed us how they how they gather evidence and how they store evidence and what they find there and how they manage to figure things out.
That was quite interesting. I mean, for me, here again, the thing that stood out, the one memory that I have many, but the one that I think of immediately when you mention that trip, is we were actually in a very rare situation, allowed to go into the place where these analysts were working on some of the stuff. And I walked past a duvet from a crime scene that was wrapped in plastic, and you could see the blood spatter on the duvet.
Yes. I see you interested in that.
I mean, that's like dun, dun, dun.
All I wanted to do was get past that and not be around dirty duvets.
You wanted to get to the gun part.
I wanted to get to the guns, yeah. I was interested in the guns, the ballistics.
I've always wondered, why aren't there more women that are sort of famous serial killers? Because I think women are so organized. Like, doing a crime is such an organized
doing
thing,
a
you
crime.
Know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I did Lelo, a crime.
True crime.
No, I can't stand true crime.
Dedicated to... women. In fact, there's one called Women Who Kill.
Are they better than men? They must be, Leanne. More organized, like everyone kind of underestimates old Susie in the corner there, and then whammy, she slits your throat kind of thing, or puts you in a cupboard Susie. And slowly watches you.
They're still scary. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not scared of a female serial killer. But they're a little more unpredictable, slightly more insane.
That's women in general, yeah.
And I think also what's fascinating is because it's rare, is a woman who's involved in trafficking or, I mean, we look at the modern day tales of Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine, her name?
Ghislaine something, yeah.
Yeah, because she was involved in you know, getting these girls to get onto planes and recruiting them and all of that. It's even more interesting. But no, the female ones are, I'd say, even scarier than the males.
So if you want to be scared, Newcastle Football Club have just been taken over by the Saudis. That's not the interesting part. The interesting part is there's a woman called Amanda Staveley. So you can look her up.
Mm-hmm.
She looks like the most terrifying person. Think of the villain you're thinking of mind in sort of modern... Monday movie, Amanda Staveley. She looks frightening. And I think to myself, if she's involved with the Saudis, oh my God. But if you see her photo, the woman you're describing and the women you've just described, Amanda Staveley looks
why
like
does
she is just
why does she scare sending... you so much? I mean, I'll put a picture up of her now. Why does she scare you?
Oh my God. She looks like a villain. She's got the whole like hard, I'm murdering like children villain. In a basement and sending them off to ships.
All right, let me show you what she looks like. Let me show you what she looks like.
Yeah, she really, really looks like the women you're describing there, Leanne. Amanda Staveley, scary. Right. But she's in our world now. Expect to hear that name a lot.
Okay. What does she do?
And possibly about murder. So she fronted the group that...
Yes,
and she fronted the group that bought Newcastle Football Club. They are now the richest sports organization in history. There she is.
What do you think,
Amanda Staveley? I think she's murdered children before for fun. The Emperor Nero used to eat downstairs, and he used to watch his victims be ravaged by wolves, right? And that was one of his like activities while he ate supper. I imagine that's what she does while sort of 15-year-old girls get taken from Sanford.
You're basing this purely on her looks. It's got nothing to do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So she might be the most innocent, sweet. There she is, Amanda Staveley.
Oh, there she. Oh my goodness. I mean, good looking. Right, obviously,
she's not a horrible
those
looking
eyes
person.
Are so evil.
She's got sort of a. I don't know. Maybe she's got a little bit of a. Plastic surgery.
She has cat-like features,
but cat-like. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Does she not look like a Bond arch nemesis?
No, no, no.
Yeah, she looks like the woman who
Amanda Staveley,
who's been following you around all your life with her team of investigators, and you just never even knew about it.
I'm telling you, she has and I mean, the Saudis, for what they are, bless them. Although the rest of the world is up to shithousery as well. But she's married into that whole, and I was reading about her and how she's tied into that whole Saudi circle. She is
Amanda Stafford.
But anyway, I'm judging just off looks, yes.
Just off her looks.
She may actually have like a children's charity that raises young women to be CEOs, but she probably sent them off for sex school first.
Yeah. Well, there we go. That's the scary woman. I'm going to keep that picture up there for a little bit longer just to frighten everybody who's not already frightened. That's quite scary.
Oh, my word.
Okay, there we go. So there's the fun for this morning with Amanda Stavely, and Bolelo's found a new girlfriend. That's good news. But look, this debate's going to carry on. The fact is, if you do like the true crime stuff and you love the serial killers shows and the women who kill and all those kinds of things, you are in the majority. There are thousands and thousands, if not millions and millions of people who watch this stuff every day. They just love it. And it's exciting. And it's the stuff that they would schedule time for. I've never downloaded a single true crime documentary. I don't watch it on TV. I'm not like the majority of people in this respect. And I'm happy to accept that. I think Bolelo's the same. Anyway, Vince says, your hate for white women continues. I don't think that's fair. Shame. Bolelo's hatred for white women. Dun, dun, dun.
It's for all people, not just white women.
Yeah. No, he's got Bolelo has enough hate to go around. Don't panic, everybody. Okay. So
I've always prided myself on that.
It is time for our favorite part of a Monday. Well, certainly one of my favorite things about a Monday. And that is Collectomania. But before we get to Collectomania, I just want to remind you there's an interesting interview coming up at 8 a.m. this morning. Angelo Agrizi. Do you remember who he is?
Of course.
He's the man.
No, he's about Crom.
He's about Crom. Yeah, like corruption Crom. So he's the guy who spilled the beans on Basasa at the State Capture Commission. In the interview that I had with him, he also spills the beans on Gavin Watson's death. Well, sort of. He tells us what his theory is. Crooked and venal politicians and how cheaply you can buy them. And how he was poisoned. Because he's wearing an oxygen thing the whole time during the interview, you'll see. And he's just released his second book. There's plenty of frightening evidence in that book, by the way. Angelo isn't backing down. He's upping the ante. You can hear about the tactics of state capture, the people involved, the amounts of money that changed hands. It's really fascinating. So you talk about Crom, you want to hear it from Angelo Agrizi. That's coming up in the next half hour. Make sure you don't miss that at 8 o'clock this morning live. Now it is time for a little bit of Collectomania. So Collectomania, of course, every week is brought to you by the South African Gold Coin Exchange and the Scoin Shop. You can check them out at scoinshop.com. And the reason we love having them on cliffcentral.com is because you can actually collect, you know, precious metals from them as well. You can get a gold coin, you can get silver, you can get platinum from them. And this is one of the few ways that you can actually have this stuff as a hedge against currency depreciation, frankly. It's something that you should think about. You have a couple of gold or silver coins in the safe, or you put them in the bank if you want to make them a little bit more safe. That gives you some kind of safe haven against the ups and downs of currencies. And we talk, you know, a lot of cryptocurrency here. We talk a little bit about foreign exchange. We talk a little bit about investments in stocks and shares. But if you're smart, you should also have some diversification into precious metals. And this is one of the things you can do to actually tick that box. So go along to scoinshop.com and see there are lots of very, very interesting collectibles there. We spoke about the James Bond coin that was released just the other day, and you can get some of those. But they've got all kinds of interesting stuff there. And speaking of interesting stuff, if you collect interesting or unusual things, get hold of us on contact@cliffcentral.com. We would love to hear from you, and we'd like to feature you and your collection on Collectomania. So we got an email from Rowan de Villiers. He sent us an email. He said, my passion for collecting encyclopedias was fostered by my journeys around South Africa, moving quite a bit when I was young, and I had a naturally curious mind. It started when I was 7 years old, and over the years I've expanded my collection to about 50 books. There are a wide range of topics that are covered in them, from the culinary arts to art history and many more. Some are bought, some inherited, some were given to me by family and friends. The collection is spread between my home and my parents' home, as I don't have the space to store it all in one place. And I have a 2-and-a-half-year-old who loves to draw in books and therefore ruined my collection. Yeah. I recently acquired a book on the Byzantine Empire's art that has become a valuable part of my collection. So let's talk to Rowan. Let's find out what he's up to. Hey, Rowan, how's it going, man?
Hey, morning, Gareth. Well done yourself.
Good, good, good. So you collect encyclopedias, but it sounds like you collect all kinds of interesting books.
Yeah, so I think it's pretty much something that I've been fascinated with since I was a young kid. You mentioned 7 years old. I actually went through my books over the weekend, and I discovered that one of the first books I was given when I was five, mm-hmm. so one of the first encyclopedias is this one here, Encyclopedia for Animals. And it was given to me on my birthday in 95. And that's pretty much where it all started. But I think, yeah, in terms of collections of rare books and things like that, I thought I brought this one along today. This is a book by Winston Churchill. It's the Second World War's abridged edition. And this one was also inherited, but you can see by the condition that it's really, really old.
Awesome.
So yeah, it's just something I'm very passionate about, and you know, the history behind it and the fascination by it. But I just think also it's because there are not many encyclopedias that are being published anymore.
No,
they can become more and more valuable as time progresses. So yeah, it's something that I'm very interested in.
So I've also got a couple of sets of encyclopedias. I got one which my parents gave me eventually. It was the one that I grew up with. It was something that I think kept me sane when I was a kid, because I was always interested in so many different things. And my grandmother, who never let me win a Trivial Pursuit, said to me, I'm not going to make this easy for you. If you want to beat me at Trivial Pursuit, you'd better learn. And I remember going through the encyclopedias virtually every night before I went to sleep. I'd read as many pages as I could until I fell asleep. And that's probably one of the things I'll give credit to for general knowledge and my love for an appreciation for and curiosity for the world. And if you have an encyclopedia set as a kid, especially before the internet, you know, I mean, we didn't have endless online resources. And an encyclopedia was like a gold mine. I could use that to look up anything from, you know, human anatomy to what you said just now about the Byzantine Empire to art to, you know, science to, I could look that stuff up in the encyclopedia and get a kind of general knowledge about it, which I think led me on to interests in very specific things later on. So did you actually read these books as a kid? I mean, were you interested in them from cover to cover?
Yeah, so talking about cover to cover, when we lived in Bloemfontein, my parents used to get so irritated with me because we would have guests come over and I would wake them up at the crack of dawn at like 4:30, 5 o'clock with a Childcraft book in my hands, and I would expect the guests to read it to me and basically read it from cover to cover. And they used to be so pissed off that they would actually look at me and go like, really, this is 4:30 in the morning. We're actually on holiday here. Why the hell are you waking up us up at 4:30 in the morning? And it just progressed further and further. And I've read a lot of them. And some of them I've actually read sections of it. The ones that actually I've read pretty avidly are the collections of the British Empire and the World War II binders that are in my collection. I think there's about 14 or 15 of them. And yeah, those are very intriguing because that's a chronological encapsulation of history from beginning to the end of the British Empire.
Do you think it's getting easier to collect books now? Obviously, one day it'll be a very rare and expensive hobby again. But because people are divesting themselves of books, you know, you can find everything on the internet, as I said earlier. So people don't, and you've got Kindle now. So many people would read digital versions of things rather than have the actual books. Of course, they take up space. You need to have places to store them. If I had to move, if I had to move house now, I guarantee you 60 to 70% of the weight of whatever you took out of my house would be books. And that's not necessarily sensible, right?
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I'm actually like half of my books are stored at other places.
Yeah.
Because if I had to store them in one place, I think half of them would have been destroyed by now, either by my 2-year-old daughter or the fact that there's just... This is, as
too
Jan
many.
Rightly said, it's just a fire hazard in so many ways.
Have you considered getting a vault, Rowan? Firstly, Rowan, incredible hair. And also, I did want to say this at the beginning.
Oh,
to
my
you,
God.
What's Rowan on? What's Rowan on?
Oh, my God.
Well, on a serious note, have you considered getting a vault for them? Like, I mean, you're collecting seriously. What you've got will be a collector's item within 10 to 15 years. Have you thought of getting like a vault or something like that?
Or a storage container?
Yeah, well, the thing is, there's risks with that as well. Because if you store it in a facility that could potentially get water damage and those kind of things, then you sit in a position where you could be screwed. And also insurance companies, and just not, they don't insure books. That's the crazy thing, is they're, unless they're a first edition hardcover and they're worth over, I think it's like 10,000 Rand, insurance companies might consider it.
Yeah.
But if it's low value, then, and you can still, they're still widely available, then you can forget about it. So, yeah, there's that aspect to consider. But I guess really, I just kind of store it wherever I can, or I loan it out to people, because I know if I loan it out to other people, then I'm going to get them to look after it just as well as I do. But
Here's a bit of a selection of your collection of books. What's the most you've spent on a book?
Sure, that's a question. I think the closest that I've spent is, I was in an antique bookstore in Stanford outside of Manus, and oh my God, who was that?
That's Simbulela's new girlfriend. You want to take a look again?
Oh, wow.
Sorry, I just had to interrupt. You spent how much?
No, it's fine. I think it's probably around about $2,000 on a book.
Okay, yeah. That's good.
But that book sadly also got lost. I lent it to my English teacher back when I was in high school, it just got lost.
Never ever never lend a book to someone unless you expect not to get it back.
Yeah, so it was kind of sad that I lost it. But anyway, it was a book about the Windsor family. It was called The Windsor Tapestries, and it was a first edition. And it was quite a valuable item in my collection, and then just vanished into the name. Yeah. I'm still wondering if it's still sitting somewhere at my old high school. But yeah, that's a very interesting one.
You know, I sometimes have dreams about being given a key to like the rare books section of a famous university or a really big public library. Just being given those keys and being allowed to just go in and explore for hours and hours and hours, because I think that would be a kind of heaven for me as well. And that their books, for example, I ordered a catalog of books from this library, and I think it's in Boston in America, and they sent it to me on a DVD. Now, none of my machines can read a DVD anymore, so I gave it to Greg at our office, and he downloaded it onto USB for me. But it's a collection of probably about 50 or 60 books that are no longer in print, that someone has painstakingly gone and scanned every page of these 50 to 60 books.
Wow.
And none of them can be bought anymore. But now I have the versions on a digital copy. I don't know what to do with them, though, because it's on a little USB, which obviously I'm never going to erase. So I've actually written on the USB what it is and put it into the safe. It's the only thing I can think to do with it.
Hmm. Well, it's like I was in the my wife and I, we traveled to Prague back in 2018, and we were able to go into the Clementina, which is one of the oldest libraries in Europe.
Wow.
And you're actually not even allowed to touch the books. You stand at a railing and you can't even take pictures in the library. It's that sensitive. And 90% of the books are in Latin, so you wouldn't be able to even understand it, because the Clementina was a monastery back in the day.
Yeah.
So it's protected. It's an absolutely stunning library. It took my breath away when I walked in. But those books, some of them are 600 to 700 years old.
Wow.
So it's an incredible, incredible collection. And the amazing thing is that it was locked up. The Soviet Union did us a very good favor with the Clementine, and they just boarded it up during the Cold War and just ignored it and never looked
Thank
after
God.
It. And then in 1992, they unlocked it and they discovered that these books were still in good condition. They hadn't been destroyed and overused.
That's
so
phenomenal.
Yeah, we're very lucky that that's incredible. The fact that it survived a world war and the Soviet and the Cold War.
On a very short list of things the Soviet Union did to advance humanity, that's absolutely on there. I'm pleased to have that report from you. That's very good. So encyclopedias are interesting because obviously they contain, all the knowledge that people had at that time in a series of books. But these collections are available, and there are bookshops across South Africa that are selling them. I think a lot of people have tried to get rid of them because they're heavy and they take up space. there are really, really great encyclopedias that are full of like color plates and illustrations and that sort of thing. And then there are those ones that are much more like dictionaries. Are there any particular collections of, because again, people used to make fun of encyclopedia salespeople, you know, they used to go, oh, the encyclopedia is like the everyman's entry into the world. But these days, I think that they probably do have quite a lot of value, especially if you've got a good set of Britannicas or one of those.
Yeah, I mean, the Britannicas are probably worth quite a bit now. I know that there is a collection in the UK that's probably worth close to £400,000.
Yeah.
If I'm correct.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was one of the first that were published back in the 19th century. So it's quite a valuable collection. But again, you know, encyclopedias are, I mean, I found an encyclopedia for the Sailorman's Cook. There was, I don't forget the name of the book, but it was in a antique bookstore in Cork Bay in Cape Town, and it was a second edition, and they were selling it for R6,500.
Sure.
So, you know, the books are going to become the next collectible that people don't realize are going to be worth quite a lot.
I think so. Jesus, what was that? Wolves.
Sorry, that's my dog. Apologies.
Wolves.
Wolves.
There are wolves that come and eat you.
Sorry. It's going to come and eat you. I'm so sorry about that.
Whoa. What kind of dogs you got going there?
It's a beagle, and he doesn't shut up.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No. I'm going to... Show us.
I was going to say a beagle. They have those extended barks that turn into kind of howls.
Please go and fetch your beagle. We want to see the beagle now.
Just give me a second.
Yeah, I want to see this dog. I love
what
Ryan
should have done was looked in the encyclopedia.
They don't just go wolf. They go woo.
Woo. Let's see the beagle.
There we go.
Yeah. Oh man, hello.
There he is.
Just down. Awesome dog. I love beagles. Aww. Hello.
What's his name?
Sorry, I didn't mean to hurt him, but yeah, that's
no shame.
This is Blake.
What is it? Blake. Hello, Blake.
Yeah.
Blake. Oh man.
Yeah, he's a bit of a nuisance. He's gorgeous. But man, he's family. He's a family pet, so he's very much full of energy.
That's awesome. Okay, now we've met the family hound. That's good news.
Yeah.
Apparently, your dog made Tracy's pug bark and growl. So how's that? We're starting.
There we go.
We're starting a chain of barking across the country this morning without
we're
even.
We're so trying. Influential.
We're yeah. starting a chain bark. Feels like we're back in the 101 Dalmatians.
Yeah. There's obviously, you know, there are things about these books that make them interesting from a value point of view, and lots of people who collect things are only collecting them for their value, but other people collect them for a number of other reasons. I mean, one of the things I like about books is that I can reference them whenever I like, which is kind of helpful because I'm interested in stuff that most other people are not. So, you know, if it's genealogical or heraldic or, you know, it has to do with inorganic chemistry, then I'm the only one who cares about that shit. But I've got my books and I know where to look something up if I'm interested in it. It's easier than Googling it for me. And the other thing is that I think books give character to a room. Like, I love the fact that a lot of rooms in my house, probably the only two exceptions are the kitchen and the dining room and the bathrooms. But otherwise, I've got books in pretty much every other room. And it makes it look nice. It makes it look like it's lived in. And, you know, if you're using those books and they've got a little bit of character because they're not in a glass case, no one can touch them, people read through them. I mean, I've got one friend, whenever she stays here, and she'll come and visit me, she'll spend the night sometimes and she'll read the Asterix books, which is by no means, you know, high literature or something that's valuable, but she absolutely loves it. So she says to me every time that she's here, she reads one of the Asterix books. It takes her like 15, 20 minutes, and she loves it just before she goes to sleep.
Yeah, no, Def. Where is that book? Over here. This one my dad gave me. Obviously thought I was quite an idiot when it came to doing it yourself.
Oh, yeah.
So he gave me a Reader's Digest do-it-yourself manual, which was published in, God knows when, first published in, 1975. So he clearly thought I was inept at hammering a nail into a wall and putting up frames, which I actually am because I've destroyed enough in my life to know putting up frames and things in our house. Like I've just chipped
no, that's
the wall the other day.
That's okay, though. I mean, I think it's a bit better than the book my mom gave me
before
I was married, which was called Cooking for One. And I use it a lot today.
That's unfortunate.
I still use it now.
There we go.
I was like, Mom, how much faith do you have in me?
Oh, my God.
Well,
Speaking of cookbooks, Peter John Vardis says, I collect cookbooks. It's hard to believe how much value some have. Oh, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about that do-it-yourself book is, like, you'll find some stuff in there that people have forgotten today. I'll tell you what, if you page through that thing, you'll discover how to, like, get the moisture out of a watch or funny things that people don't know about anymore. You know, some people, there's some interesting stuff there. There's some wisdom. There's some arcane knowledge, which we've moved on from because we think, oh, well, you know, if the watch doesn't work, we'll send it to someone. There used to be a time where we had to solve those problems ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, my grandfather, my dad's father, he pretty much fixed everything in his house. He never ever sent it to a repairman.
Yes.
He became pretty much a handyman in his own home. So when anything broke, whether it be a toaster, a hair dryer, we would take it to him because he would know how to fix it.
He'd fix shit.
So he just did everything. It was like, oh, just call Grandpa Frank. He'll fix it for you. Don't worry. Right. And I mean, he worked for the South African Post Office, which then became Telkom for 45 years.
Right.
So he just kind of learned as he went on in life.
I really admire that. That's absolutely incredible. And what I admire still, Rowan, is your openness to lending books out, because Gareth's dream is to get the key to all the old books. I also have a dream with the books that have been stolen from me. Is I have a dream where I murder each person actively with my hands.
Ah, this is where the serial killers come in. See, Leanne, we've gone full circle, Leanne.
Mbulelo, you can haunt them in your death by having your book fly out the shelf like a poltergeist.
Well, Bolero, there's actually quite a few books that are quite heavy and hefty enough to kill someone. So mm-hmm. you've got a murder weapon already.
Mm. All right. Yeah, so, Rowan, if your house is burning down, which you can only take one book with you and you grab your beagle with the other arm, what's your book going to be? What are you saving and what are you going to have to let go?
Oh, it's
tough, right?
Shit, that's a hard one. Mm. That's like deciding whether to take my child or a book. Mm. Lord.
No, it's 50-50.
Well, wow, that's a difficult one. I mean, sure, I'd probably take some of the more older books, but I'd probably take my book of Winston Churchill because it's a valuable book to me.
That's excellent.
But that's it. I'd take that one. I mean, Winston was quite a wise man in his day. So
he wrote some good stuff down. Here's a great piece of advice on the do-it-yourself stuff. Corona's Boring says, what happens is... Hang on, my microphone went off. So Corona's Boring says, with wet electronics, you leave it in rice overnight and then the Chinese people come when you're sleeping and fix it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's interesting.
Do you go to these... these fairs, what do you call them? It's almost like an outside kind of market.
Craft market.
Yeah, where people sell shit, because those places can be either really interesting or terribly disappointing. And I've realized that so many of them are terribly disappointing that it's not worth getting in your car and going to them most of the time. But do you find that if you go to those markets, you occasionally find some treasure?
I mean, there's the Milnerton Market in Cape Town that's quite well known for being a flogger of just people's hoarding of stuff. I mean, it's sometimes people say, you're a collector. Oh, you must be a hoarder. That's the usual comment. It's like, oh, but
the difference in your mind between a hoarder and a collector? I say it's tidiness. Hoarders are untidy.
I had a conversation with a friend of mine the other day, and I was saying to them about how everyone collects something.
Mm.
And if she argued with me for about 10 minutes saying, no one, not everyone collects something. I said, okay, well then go through your phone and look at how many photos you have on your phone. Then you're a collector. because you're collecting photos. So everyone collects something, whether it be jewelry, whether it be money, whether it be we're collecting something. So at the end of the day, if you're a hoarder or a collector, you're still collecting. So I think it's
Bulelo keeps he keeps one toenail from every one of his victims. That's what he collects.
It's true. It's for the soup I'm going to poison the next victim with.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. Yeah. No, but there are some great places in Cape Town. There used to be an antique craft market at Blauwklip and Farm in the Boerland area in Cape Town. And the one day I found a Rolex watch there.
Jeez.
The guy was selling, it was made in 1934.
Yeah.
And he was selling it for, I think it was like 25 or 28,000 rand. Hmm. But it was a vintage. It still had its original strap, but was still all the original mechanisms. And I just put it on my wrist, and I didn't even realize what price it was. And I said, "Shit!" When I saw 28,000, I was like, "Okay, here you go. You can just have it back."
But you'd probably be able to, if it was 28,000 then, it's probably worth like 100,000 now. So it might have been the right thing to buy. Some stuff you really never know. Well, listen, dude, thank you for sharing your collection with us. It's no problem. It's great to have someone who cares about books as much as some of us do. And I hope you continue to expand your collection and that your daughter doesn't draw all over them. One day she'll appreciate them.
Hopefully. Yes, we'll never know.
Yeah. By the way, a lot of answers coming in here about the difference between hoarders and collectors. Collectors are organized, says Luke and Day. And then someone else says hoarders are usually driven by some fear or a lack of something. That's interesting. Mm. Collectors are engineers. Well, I don't know about that. Okay. I'm not sure.
Interesting
about that.
Comment.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Thanks, man. Good to see you.
Thanks, Gareth. Nice to see
Rowan.
You too.
There we go. There's Rowan de Villiers and his collection of books in Collectomania today, which is brought to you by the Scoin Shop and the South African Gold Coin Exchange. Hoarders.
So to loop in the whole serial killer thing as well.
You're obsessed.
That there were serial killers who would keep the skin of their victims and make books out of them.
Oh.
But also there are people who just made human skin books anyway.
Hmm. Yeah, there's a book supposedly in the Vatican Library called the Necronomicon, which is bound in human flesh and written in human blood.
Yeah, you know who else did that? Old Ilse Koch. She was known as the Bitch of Buchenwald.
Yes, nice creature that. Isn't this her? Let me just see. Isn't this a picture of her right here? That's
her. Oh, that's a direct descendant. Yeah. She uses the skin of 15-year-olds for Saudi books.
Horrible. All right. Well, that's all we got time for this morning. But I do want to finish off with a really sweet video. It's just one of those things that just makes you happy. It's a video of the EFF. They're protesting at a factory in an industrial area, and the guy is shaking the gate, trying to break into the factory and destroy it, obviously. And the police come, and they do what the police are meant to do. So we always give the police a hard time, but this video will fill your heart with joy. Watch this quickly. The EFF pitch up, and they're trying to break into this factory, and see what the police do here. I'll explain afterwards. There's the EFF trying to break the gate down. The police van screeches in. The police hop out of the van. EFF start to disperse.
Oh,
police get
shotgun,
out.
Hello.
They've got a shotgun. And the police start firing rubber bullets at them. And there's just joy, unbridled joy all around as the police protect property, which is one of the reasons we have the police. Isn't that nice?
Oh, how many times have you wanted to do that driving in traffic? Just whip out your horn. Get rid of everyone.
So the police obviously be using rubber bullets, or I don't know, maybe if you let your fantasy go wild, they're a bit of rock salt. And they manage to disperse these cretins who are destroying private property. That's one of the reasons we have a government, by the way. We have a government to make sure that our rights are enforced against each other and that someone can't just pitch up and try to break your gate down and steal your stuff. So yeah, let's just remind.
But I also like how when the cops arrived, people didn't run away immediately because there wasn't that initial fear.
Yes,
they thought, they're probably going to try and tell us what to do.
Right.
But he was like, no nonsense, get out, no warning, just fire.
These policemen get out of the car with shotguns and they start firing rubber bullets. And the EFF people disperse pretty quickly after that. So it's good to see. Now here, on the issue of ISIS, is a really passionate American woman from New York who says, ISIS, I'm not afraid of you. And September the 11th may have been 20 years ago, but I'm still not afraid of you. Look at this.
ISIS, if you come to New York City and you try to blow anything up, I'm coming for you. Yeah, ISIS niggas. Fuck yeah, ISIS niggas. We from New York. I'm from Brooklyn. Fuck ISIS. They killed my boy Biggie.
Oh my gosh.
Don't you want her on your side?
She's the kind of homegirl
ISIS.
You need.
Yo, ISIS, wow. I'm gonna come fuck you up, ISIS. I love her.
Come for you. Come to New York.
Can we play it again? Let's just play it again to wrap up the morning on a high. Okay.
ISIS, if you come to New York City and you try to blow anything up, I'm coming for you. Yeah, ISIS niggas. Fuck yeah, ISIS niggas. We from New York. I'm from Brooklyn. Fuck ISIS. They killed my boy Biggie.
They killed my boy Biggie.
For those who can't see, they've superimposed her into like fighter jets and military tanks.
She's the greatest.
Oh my God.
Okay. God bless her. She's awesome. All right, everybody. Have a happy Monday. I will not see you tomorrow, but Bulela will very capably look after you along with Lebang tomorrow. And then I will be back on Wednesday. So have an excellent day. And don't miss the Angelo Agrizi interview, which is coming up now. This is CliffCentral.com. Have a very happy Monday. We'll see you later.
CliffCentral.com.